Hello, and welcome to our first inaugural TAG Book Club discussion. I really appreciate you listening in, and I'm really excited to roll this inaugural series out with who has become one of my favorite persons, if that's the right term to use, Jordan Morrow.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, welcome to being here for this first TAG Book Club.
Well, big thank you, because I know you recommend a couple of my books, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, you've written a couple of books. Today we're going to really talk about Be Data Literate. Yeah. I got it sitting right in front of us, you know, and it's dog-eared and marked up, and I got, you know, pieces of paper in it. But we're really going to let you kind of talk a little bit about, you know, the key elements of this book. For me, obviously, it's really, I think, timely and interesting for not only Human Resources Command, but also the Adjutant General Corps and the Army, because it's talking about data, which is something that we need to get a little better in.
Yeah, and it's really about, you know, we did the episode before, is about demystifying. When you think about data literacy, that's really what I want it to do for everyone, right? And I'll talk a little bit. I think it was probably not long after this book launched. I was on the trail with a friend, and as we were coming down the trail, another person I knew came up. And I think she congratulated me on the book, but then made a comment along the lines like, I'm probably too stupid to understand it or read it, which is totally missing the point.
Yeah.
I did not write a PhD level book. That's not what data literacy is. This is a book for everyone to be more comfortable and confident using data, because we live in a world flooded with AI, data, analytics, all of these things. Companies all over the place, organizations like the Army want to harness this power. But when the vast majority of people are not going to school for this, how do we make them comfortable with it? And that's hopefully what this book does.
Yeah, I mean, I was gonna throw at you. It was interesting. I picked it up. I was suggested. You know, it was suggested to me from several people, Jordan, and it was just easy to read.
Yeah, I write how I talk.
Yeah,
and if people hear me present, and it's really funny. And when I think it was my third book I was writing, and the editor, the person going through and editing the chapters, was basically like, remember, don't use something to the effect, don't use too many personal examples, stick to business or whatever. I'm like, no, because if I'm talking about marketing examples and you're not in marketing, how are you going to relate? People relate to personal things. So when you read a book from me, or if you read a blog post that I have on my Substack, whatever, hopefully I'm writing the way that I talk, because I enjoy public speaking, I enjoy doing things like this, I just love talking about data. Hopefully that's how the book comes across.
Yeah, it did for me, and you know, honestly, I think that's why it landed on our, you know, Adjutant General, you know, book reading list.
Yeah.
Because it's approachable.
Yes, absolutely.
In a topic that, you know, a lot of times is not approachable for many, or at least that has a stigma that, hey, that's not me, or this is too difficult. So I really appreciate the way that you kind of you laid it out.
The way I look at it is, there's a reason most people aren't going to school for math. A lot of people don't like math. There's a reason they're not going to school for statistics. I wish there was basic statistics for everybody, because our minds don't think statistically, right? They're not developed in that way. So I understand that the majority of people don't want that. Can I put in front of them information that just helps them be more comfortable, that helps them have this? That book is such an easy way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think it's great. Now, maybe tell us a little bit about how your process for writing.
Oh my gosh. So,
because this was your first.
That's
book.
My first one. Yeah. I never realized I would love writing. I'm writing my fourth right now. I never realized that I would love writing as much as I do. So the whole premise was, I originally was partnering with someone maybe all the way back in 2018 and 19. We were going to self-publish and all that, but that's hard. This person lived, I think he lived in Singapore. I'm over here. We had a coach or whatever. It did not work. And the way this came to be was, my publisher is Kogan Page. It's Kogan. It's Kogan Page or something, but anyway, I get a message from them saying, hey, I think they saw me interviewing with a gentleman named Bernard Marr, who I have a big following. He's got probably over 1 million followers on LinkedIn, big data voice.
Yeah.
He interviewed me, we became like data friends or colleagues, and I think my publisher saw that video. Hey, do you want to write a book? Yeah.
Absolutely,
so
let's do
this.
This
is like November 2019, December. But I'm sitting here thinking, great, I'm going to write a book. Yeah. And no, I still had to submit a proposal they had to approve. So I sent them a proposal in December with the holiday season. They approved it in January. We maybe started writing in February, and then COVID hits.
Yeah.
And editors or some staff got furloughed, all this, and we just delayed. And then it got kicked back in, and I forgot the deadline, whether they had told me or not. And it was like, by the way, your book's due in like 3 weeks. So I had like four more chapters or five to write, and my wife was having surgery, and I was taking time off. So I literally, while she's recovering, wrote like 8 hours a day for like 4 or 5 days straight or something, and get the book out. And never did I realize how much I would enjoy writing, right? And so then, in the early stages, I don't think I had even finished book one. My ideas for book two were there because the term data-driven was becoming popular.
Yeah.
And then I wrote my third book, and then I took a break because if you talk to other authors and they find out that I wrote three books over 3 years, that's insane. Kind of is. It's just a lot of work. I also didn't realize it takes 12 to 18 months to go from probably when you're commissioned to the actual publishing.
Yeah.
Because you write. But anyway, for me, I can pound through the writing of the book super quick. One of the things I learned in the process, and I'm happy, anybody listening to this, if you have an interest in writing books, I helped Colonel Sailing, who you know, Colonel Chris Sailing, get a book deal. I believe I helped her get the book deal with Kogan that she's writing right now. I love this. I love mentoring or helping in the writing space. But like one of the keys for my process is I like having dedicated time, right? And I'm a morning person, so it could be I'm up at 4, I write from 4:15 to 5 and submit it off. The other key thing is when you're writing a book or you're writing your thoughts, do not edit it as you go. I want to key in on this point because if you edit as you go, you might spend an hour on one paragraph versus just write it all out. I submit it to my editor. They send it back. And a lot of times I just hit accept all changes unless they need me to expand. Because number one, I don't want to edit it. But number two, that's their job, right? They're the professionals. I write my ideas, so forth. So I don't know when I'll stop writing. I'm in book four right now, and we're already talking a little bit about the next book. So it's like, it'll stop when it stops.
Yeah, no, I think that's fantastic the way you explain that. You know, just write and don't just over-edit.
Yeah.
Yeah, just keep going.
Yeah, and it's like, do you remember taking tests in high school? It's like usually your first answer is the right one, but you overthink it. So is it this one? No, I think it's that one. And you just go, no, like if I have a chapter, one of the things I did with my fourth book, better than my others, is I built out a really nice outline.
Yeah.
So I know this is what I'm writing about, that I've broken that down, and then I just go.
Yeah.
And then you source it, and you get your references and all that. I've even used GPT, not to write, but okay, tell me about all the C-suites I should include in the fourth book. Or however, that's not my exact phrasing, then I don't need to include this, but I can include that.
Yeah.
And so it's this, just get your ideas down. And one of the things for me is I journal like crazy. I love to write. And so I think that we're doing ourselves a disservice if we're sitting on our phone versus putting things down and just writing ideas, writing thoughts. I'm sure you and I could sit after this episode and just write ideas on a board for an hour.
Yeah.
And be like, okay, well, we can eliminate these because we can't do them, but look at these great ideas. Yesterday, we had a great meeting doing that, right?
Yeah.
That to me is when you're writing in any book, just write. Just put things down, and you can get rid of half of it if you want, but just put your ideas down.
Yeah, you know, the staff's always worried on a Monday when they come in here in the tag,
because,
you know, I've had the weekend to, like, you know, do a lot of, you know, walking and thinking and just throwing ideas down, and then we get into that discussion about the you know, the great ideas of the week. But, you know, I've never really focused to write, so I love hearing the process that you follow.
I would rather hear someone say, it took me 3 months to read your book, but I have two notebooks full of notes, than someone say, I read it in 3 weeks, it was great. Because the person who read it in 3 weeks, not that that's necessarily bad, I'm super happy you read my book and you did that, but what are you doing with it?
Yeah.
The person who took 3 months, who wrote all these notes down, okay, great, now you can formulate goals. You can now formulate applicability.
Yeah.
That's what we should be doing, right? A person who reads 100 self-help books in a year versus someone who reads two, but I see tangible outcomes with the two versus the 100, that's where our direction should be going.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of what I'm doing with your book when I suggest it to other folks in the Army. It's like trying to nudge folks to, you know, do a little bit in this space.
Yeah.
You know, think about it, you know, since it's consumable. And again, it's really consumable for folks, especially if you don't know anything about data. This is going to get you a pretty good understanding.
One thing I might do with you, and this will be off the episode, but one of the things I'm doing in my fourth book is that at the end of each chapter, they have journal assignments.
Yeah.
We could do that with this book as you put it in your book club and say, and I can come up with those. You have everybody buy a notebook. And at the end of each chapter, I'm going to give you 1 to 5 different journal assignments that you get from that chapter. To your point, you talk a lot about exposure. Awareness is key. What if with this book, we sit here and we put, with every chapter, go do this. And all it is how can you apply this principle? Write down what you do on a day-to-day basis. Where can data fit in?
Yeah.
That's all we have to be doing.
Yeah.
It's not, oh my gosh, I need to take 10 hours worth of SQL coding and then I'm moving on to Python and I'm going to study these statistical models. You don't need to do that. Read the chapter on my 3 C's of data literacy, yeah. Curiosity, creativity, critical thinking. What can I do with data to apply there?
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's start with, maybe explain the data world a little bit.
So the data world, my thought process has evolved. In fact, that book is evolving.
Yeah,
one thing, edition number 2 comes out September, I believe, this year, because we're now adding pieces of AI into it. And so, but the data world is such that it has a ton of buzzwords. Data literacy is even one of them. And so you've got data science, AI, big data, data literacy, all these things. But when we boil it down, what data is here for is to empower decisions. It's to empower an outcome. So how can data support us in that? And so when you read that book, that's what I want you to be thinking. Okay, these are the goals that I have in my position, either in the HRC or wherever you are in the Army. This is what I am tasked with right now. How can data support it? I think when we look at data in that lens, we start to get a better understanding of where it fits. A lot of businesses, if I were to go to them and say, show me how you use data to reach that outcome, they're going to struggle.
Yeah.
And they might say, well, I use this dashboard to tell me what's happening. All you did was find out what's happening. How did you get an outcome? That's what we want data to do. The whole world of data is full of jargon, of advanced terminology, but that's not what we need to do. That's not what you need to learn. Yeah, maybe you get some comfort around some of the more technical terms, but I don't need you proficient in the technical skills. I need you proficient in data literacy.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think for me, that's what it's a lot about here at HRC. It's like, hey, we do these processes. A lot of folks have been here doing processes, and they do a pretty good job at them. But now we're linking those processes to an outcome tied to our human resources, 2030 vision.
Yep.
And then showing progress and, feedback tied to those outcomes we're trying to get to.
Yep. I love it. Well, and that's the thing is, I think when people can view data as just a supporting tool, like this podcast is a supporting tool.
Yeah.
Microsoft Teams, a supporting tool. Jordan's book, Be Data Literate, a supporting tool. Then we can really remove, hopefully, fear and trepidation that, how am I using data to do this? Oh, it's very simple. To your point, this is an outcome. Here's every tool you have. By the way, one of those is data.
Yeah.
And we're putting a program, Data Literacy 101. All of that together to just help you be more confident with it.
Yeah, absolutely. You kind of go step by step through the book. It's pretty, I think, informative in those terms. One thing you highlight is there's several types of analytics.
Yeah.
Maybe talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, in fact, I believe my third book is all about these four levels.
Yeah.
There are four levels. Like when we hear the term analytics, one of the things that I think causes problems in the data space is lack of familiarity, right? If I'm in a business and I ask a marketing person, what does accounting do? Oh yeah, they do the accounting for the company. Well, if I'm a finance manager and you ask what marketing does, well, they're marketing the brand and all that. Now go ask them, what does data and analytics do? They might not understand it. So I think a good, solid, just foundational understanding is big. And with analytics, there are four levels: descriptive, diagnostic, predictive, prescriptive. Think of the last two, predictive and prescriptive, as your more technical, your data scientists, your machine learning, your AI. Vast majority of people, by far, don't need skills in that beyond being able to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah.
Where we really focus in with data literacy, I would say, is on descriptive analytics and diagnostic. A quick example really can help bring this to life, and I think personal examples help. Imagine you're sick. A doctor says to you, you're sick, leaves the room and never returns. You're not going back to that doctor. But what that doctor said was a descriptive analytic describing the situation. What you want the doctor to do is say, you're sick, here's why. That's descriptive to diagnostic analytics. The doctor gave you a diagnosis, right? Because then once you have a diagnosis, the doctor can say, if you do this, you can get better. You're predictive analytic. Sometimes the doctor gives you a prescription, an external thing fixing you. That's your prescriptive analytic. When we look at it in that lens, it's this segue through a process, and that's how data should be. You build a dashboard, an OKR, a metric, and you measure it, your descriptive analytic. What is happening? Well, maybe most important is why that occurred. It's your diagnostic analytic. Then you can test things. I think if we do this, we improve retention. And then, by the way, we're implementing some AI pieces to get some prescriptive analytics.
Yeah.
that hopefully kind of demystifies how analytics should work for an organization.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think it's helpful. I think a lot of times we get stuck in, I do this analytics stuff, but I do find a lot of it's just transactional. I'm just tracking the numbers.
Yep.
You know, I got 55 in, I knocked out, 54, and it took me this long to do it. I think the big ask I always have of my own teammates here in the Adjutant General Directorate is, hey, think a little further. How does that tie into the ultimate, how do I take care of soldiers better?
Yep.
You know, how do you get a little curious about it? How do you just improve kind of what we're doing versus kind of doing the process?
Well, and I'm going to piggyback right on that because you're nailing it. In a business or in the Army, organizations are stuck at descriptive analytics, building dashboards, metrics, OKRs. They'll list what happened and then they move on. So they're stuck at descriptive analytics. What we see a lot of times too is a lot of the money is going to predictive and prescriptive because it's the sexy thing right now, AI.
Yeah.
The key area that is forgotten but is probably the most important level is the diagnostic, the why. So to your point, we're trying to improve the soldier experience. That's a why. Okay, we see all these metrics. Tell me why that's occurring and how can you apply that to improving the experience of the soldier? If you can't do that very well, how are we going to really improve the situation, the customer service that you talk about?
Yeah.
How are you going to improve that without knowing why the dashboard looks the way it does?
Yeah.
And not just from a, my gut tells me it's this. I love it. Use your gut. I'm not trying to get rid of that. But what does the data do combined with your gut?
Yeah, yeah.
Figure out that why.
Yeah, I mean, we had a great, in maybe the hour that I wasn't with you yesterday, Jordan, we had a really great lay down for my evaluations branch. And we were going over error rates.
Yep.
You know, and I'm a little embarrassed to say our error rates are too high for my, I don't know. I'm not pleased with our error rates. So they're hovering probably close to 18 to 20%.
Yep.
And we're tracking it. And we know, hey, this is how many come in. This is how many err. We know why. We know why they err out. And I'm like, can we take it the next step?
Yeah.
So what do we want to do about the error rate? Is it more education?
Yeah.
Or... is there a way to actually update the system to eliminate the errors? And in a couple of cases, I think it's probably really easy, and that's where we started to head towards.
Yeah.
In some cases, like, the Army's a big thing, right? We have to go into the Pentagon. We got to ask the permission to change an Army form.
Yep.
But it's like, let's do that.
It's a predictive analytic, right? If we do and target these three things, let's see what happens. But then what we have to do, it's cyclical, right? As soon as you start with those predictions, like change the form, what monitoring system do we have placed to build a new descriptive analytic?
Yep.
And then you do the diagnostic. It's going the way we want. Why? Perfect. It worked. But we have to stay on top of it and iterate and evolve. Maybe on model number two, it was something totally out of left field. And we're testing it. And we find it worked pretty well. But we found this little area had an issue from the descriptive analytic. We now know why, so we remodify that prediction. So that's analytics. Brent Dykes is another author out there, and he did a post on LinkedIn, call it like the set it and forget it or the iterative sort of approach. And I might have messed his terminology up, but we can't have a set it and forget it with data and analytics.
Right.
It's always having, maybe it's once a quarter, we have an iteration week.
Yeah.
Like you had this meeting, it might be okay. Once a quarter, beginning of the quarter, we're going to have this meeting again just for an hour. We tried a few things. And then you put it on your team. You make them accountable and say, don't just show me a dashboard. You can send me the dashboard descriptive beforehand. This hour is going to talk about the why. It's going to make people uncomfortable to do that.
Yeah.
I had a leader when I was at Click who, when he took a role, did that. Right? It's you send me in advance the dashboards. You're going to have to come to this meeting and be accountable for what the dashboard looks like. Why are things occurring the way they do? That makes people uneasy because if all you have to do is present a dashboard, I check that off.
Yeah.
Now imagine you have to come in and tell me why it looks the way it does.
Yeah.
But that's the shift we want to get people comfortable with. That's what the book should hopefully help them do is how do you get a little more comfortable doing
that? No, I 100% agree. And, we're right in the middle of that, and that's part of the reason why we have you out at Human Resources Command, right? And part of why we're really pushing data 101 and exposure, which is really tied to data literacy, right? So, you define it in the book. What say you, Jordan?
Oh, yeah. The definition of data literacy, just plain and simple, is the ability to read, work with, analyze, and communicate effectively with data. But it's not a one-size-fits-all. So those four characteristics, reading, working with, analyzing, and communicating with data, will be predicated upon what you're supposed to be doing, right? If I'm, let's say I go to a private sector, I'm in a business. The CEO does not have time to build a large statistical model. They shouldn't be doing that, right? Same with yourself as a general. Your job is not to be building all of it, it's to be receiving it and analyzing it. So those four characteristics are what people should be developing, but within their own sphere of where they are and where they want to go.
Yeah.
And for some people, that could be data engineering and data science. So we're going to give you a more technical learning path. For the majority of people, it's going to Data Literacy 101 to expose you to it, to give you more awareness around it. And as we talked, you know, as we build more courses, we're still not going technical.
Yeah.
I told you number two is, how do you make a decision with data?
Right. Right.
How do you then storytell with data? Those are not technical things, right, to an extent. But even when you need the technical, I'm not going to teach you all the technical. I'm going to teach you how to communicate with the technical so they can do it for you.
Yeah.
And so not only are we upskilling people, but we're evolving the culture to have a more data-driven mindset.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. I just love the way that you plainly laid that out. And that's kind of where we're headed, right? You know, so we've started with Data 101 here at HRC for employees, and then we'll work into this 201 and 301, and then some of the tools we use, right? We use BI a lot, Power BI a lot. So we'll start to also lay that out. Hey, what's the mechanics? How do you kind of work through it? And then to your point, it's also shifting kind of how we do our own kind of metrics. You know, business huddles, if you use more of a civilian term, you know, where division chiefs and managers are really explaining some of the why and what we're learning from it.
Well, I'll point something to that. I went out last year to Scotland, and an organization similar to our military, it was Scottish Fire and Rescue, brought me out to do a data literacy conference where essentially for 3 days, I was the only speaker. Right, they would have people do introductions or maybe answer some questions, but it was me. The day prior to those 3 days, I met with their leadership and was teaching them, and it might have been directly the next day, I had one of those leaders say something to the effect, and hopefully I don't mess the story up, someone presented something to her and she said, what data did you use? It's little nuances like that, it's so simple, right? Maybe it's leadership, a colonel or a general, and someone comes to you and says, here's my idea. Okay, tell me the data you use to do that. And if they can't do it, say, I need you to have some more data to support this. Mm-hmm. I'm totally good with the idea. We just need to make sure that your idea and the data combined is the right maneuver. Those are some of the things that we just want to get those nuances so that every time someone has a decision, it's just a quick reaction to say, show me what data you used behind this. Because I think one of the things that can illuminate for us is accessibility to tools, BI, and maybe they don't have access to the data.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. You know, one of your focus everywhere, right, on your engagements outwardly, your books, et cetera, is just on learning development, et cetera. A lot of it lands on culture, though.
Absolutely.
Right? You know, talk a little bit about your perspective on culture.
It's so interesting to me that in the data and analytics space, how often it comes back to people.
Yeah.
You can have perfect data, clean. You can have perfect tools, amazing. And if people don't want to use it, good luck, right? And I used to say the number one roadblock to data and analytics success is culture. I would probably still say that, but I'm going to add to it. It's culture and people.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason I think the culture butts up against it is number one, the moment you use the word change, they don't like it.
Yeah.
Change management is hard. Changing culture, I never am going to go into a business and say, I'm here to change your culture. They're going to be like, what the heck is this dude doing? I use the word evolve. Right, I want to remove the stigma away from changing a culture to the empowerment of a culture to make it more data-driven. And by data-driven, I don't mean the human element is gone. There's these little nuances, like I say, or these key things you can do to help people feel comfort that what we're doing is empowerment, not changing, not eliminating, empowerment. I was speaking last year at an event with a buddy of mine, and we had two sessions, I think it was over 2 days, and how often it came back to people. Again, you can have all the technical, all the tools, all the data set up perfectly, but if people don't want to do it, good luck.
Yeah.
And so that mindset, that idea around this, how do you shape a culture and evolve it to understand without fear, without trepidation, matters so much.
Yeah, I think that's why, you know, for me, it's pretty exciting here, but even in the Army, right?
Yep.
More and more data literacy is kind of happening. You know, yep. And it's really, you know, it's not at its crescendo. We're still kind of gaining steam here.
Absolutely.
But a lot of it, I think, is centered at that. You know, exposure, et cetera, is meant to really kind of help shape our culture longer term.
Well, and we talked about it yesterday when we were together, and that was wars of the future are going to be different, right? And part of the cultural shift is a necessity. It's a need.
Yeah.
Because as algorithms, AI, technology, and things become more and more powerful across the globe, it might not be soldiers on foot. It might be soldiers at a computer assessing technology and stuff. And I don't need them to be totally technical. The tools are going to become more powerful in the sense that we have to do less technically. But I want the data literacy to be there so they're comfortable in using it. And so this whole idea is not elimination. It's not change, it's empowerment. I think evolve and empower are the two key terms when we think about the book or anything, is can we put it in front of people and make them happy with it? And to your point, we're not at a crescendo, but it does mean that we are going to be changing things from the past. And I've worked with different generals, and you can see those that get it. In fact, I was with one general, General Schultz. We were in DC with, I think, probably her leadership group. I was running a workshop, and I had a colonel, I believe, I tell people, question everything. And his comment was to the effect, we're taught not to question. And she spoke up. And she's like, no, we got to change that. And I'm not talking questioning orders from someone above.
Yeah.
Unless it's, you know, not a right order. I'm talking about if data is presented to you, that data might be 100% accurate. I just want you to say, oh, why'd you choose this data? Why'd you use this visualization? Show me the data source. Doesn't mean it's not accurate. I'm just the curiosity, which is one of my favorite terms.
Yeah.
Allow it, like my favorite way to describe it, the best data literacy detectives are children. I've got five kids. How many questions do you think I get regularly from them?
A few.
And they know dad is the guy, hopefully they know, that says never stop asking, even though I tell them to stop asking at times. We become adults, we don't ask questions. Business sector, army, we just stop asking. We just get orders or we get assignments and we just do them. Just start asking questions. Prime example, and then I'll turn it back over for questions, but when I was at American Express, I inherited a report when I took a role that over like 70 PowerPoint slides long, it's years ago, so hopefully I'm not messing up details, and the majority of those slides were linked back to a chart in Excel.
Mm-hmm.
And this went to, I want to say, a lot of the senior leaders of American Express.
Yeah.
This is not long after the housing financial crisis. It was delinquency and write-off rates, a big deal, right? And so eventually I broke it down into six total charts that they could view on their phone. My senior vice president was like, just send this. Going from 70 PowerPoint slides to six total charts on a phone, no slides, I didn't have one pushback. Creativity and curiosity to do something different. Probably opened up my time and eliminated stress. So that's what I want people to do, is just question things. I'm not telling you don't question. If General Johnson gives you an order and you need to get it done, that's not what I mean. Question data. Another question I've had people say is, how many of you would be comfortable questioning a CEO?
Yeah.
And in this case, questioning a general.
Yeah.
Not very many people, I think, are comfortable.
Yeah.
You need to get comfortable. That's the culture.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the culture shift. Hey, you know, I'm a big fan of curiosity, because
yep.
especially as you walk in and you say, hey, how are we operating and what are we using and what's the outcome we're looking for?
Yeah.
And how do we actually, you know, better and get to the outcome that we're looking for? You know, in our case, it's all about, you know, how do we take care of soldiers better? How do we retain, how do we recruit, how do we maintain the all-volunteer force? So,
yeah.
I mean, I think it's, we're kind of in high times where we got to be a little more curious, you know, as we go here.
One of my things that I want organizations, I would encourage you to do it with your team, and I would encourage any business I go to, is to take a step back and evaluate your data landscape. Look at every dashboard. And in this case, this dashboard does this. How is this improving the soldier experience?
Yeah.
This dashboard does this. How is this helping us achieve our 2030 vision? And if you can't tie it to it, we have to have the guts to kill it. We have to have the guts to just kick it to the curb, free up time to build a new report, and then reevaluate that. This goes back to celebrating the failures. Maybe that new report, you figure out, oh man, that does nothing for us, but we learned these three key things. I want businesses to do that. Their organizations are throwing so much money at this. But if you can't show me how it's tied to the outcome, the goals that you're setting, we need to take a step back.
Yeah.
And we need to evaluate the landscape. And that's fine. It's hard for people to want to do that, though. They're comfortable. They think job security. They think those things. We talk about a cultural shift. We have to make them comfortable with elimination of work and then recreating more improved work.
Yeah, yeah, a shift in work.
Exactly right.
We talk a lot about that. Hey, we're not really eliminating jobs here at Human Resources Command or other places. We're really shifting some of the focus and work.
Absolutely. And to do that, people need to read the book. I'm not doing that for self, you know, gratification. But if you want to be able to shift the work with the economy that now exists in the world, you need to be developing skills in data and analytics without having to become technical.
Yeah, and you know, honestly, that's again another reason why it's sitting on the reading list, Jordan. It's like, hey, you know, you get exposed to this, and then all of a sudden, I think you get a little more curious, right?
Yes.
You start to ask some different questions and lead in a different direction. Okay, we're coming to a close here in a minute, but I did want to ask you about data decision making.
Yeah,
and I know you've been talking about it.
Yep.
But maybe just make it a little more clear for those that are listening what we mean by data decision making.
It's where I don't want to eliminate your gut feel, your intuition, your experience. I just want you to have that combined with whatever data sources you can. We've talked about this yesterday on the accessibility of data and do they have the availability of tools, which, yes, that might be a hurdle we have to overcome. But data-driven decision making is basically a framework, if you will, to how do we use questions and outcomes that we're trying to achieve and data to support it. So when you look at the four characteristics of data literacy in my book, Reading, Working with, Analyze, Communicating with Data, it's applying those four principles against a problem you're trying to solve and using data. So one of the things that I created, I call the Tri-Data, and it's data-driven problem solving, data-driven decision making, and data-driven execution. Where Tri-Data came from, no lie, was if you remember the video game Nintendo or Zelda on Nintendo, it had the Triforce.
I beat it as a kid.
I came up with the Tri-Data. That's how nerdy I am, right? And I actually changed the image so Nintendo couldn't sue me. But it's these three pillars to be data-driven. Data-driven problem solving, using the four characteristics of data literacy against a problem, applying that to making a decision. Once you have the decision, though, you have to execute on it. And part of the execution, build into it a feedback loop so you problem solve again over and over. That's being data-driven, and data-driven decision-making is a key element. And if you think about, we're sitting in chairs, but picture a stool that has three legs. If one of the legs is broken, you don't want to sit on that stool. That's the same thing with data-driven decision-making, is it also needs to be a part of problem-solving and execution. We're just trying to use data to help you make a better decision. And then you execute on it, and then you don't set it and forget it, you iterate on it to problem-solve again, use that problem-solving to make a decision, execute on that decision, get the right parties involved who need to be involved, and the loop just goes on and on and on. That is culture shift. That is data-driven decision-making.
Yeah, no, awesome. I appreciate it. And you know, anything else you want to throw out about the book, Jordan?
Yeah, what I would say to anybody who picks it up, don't be like the person that came to me on the trail and said something to the effect, I'm probably too stupid to do this. That's not the whole point. The whole premise is for those who do not have a background in this, let's help you get more confident and comfortable. Number two, I would say turn to General Johnson, HRC, and the resources that are there, right? Utilize them. And the third thing that I'd say is I'm an open book. You've gotten to know me. Anybody can ask me anything. I helped Colonel Salen get a book deal. Let's just march forward. Connect with me. Ask me anything.
Yeah.
I flew out here, hopefully get home today in the bad weather. But like, and the story of coming out here was an adventure with a broken water line, you know, but I love this. I love this world. So in any way that I can help, and I know we're going to be working continually going forward, but invite me to more. If people want to have an hour-long session with me where I just sit with them virtually and we just answer questions, don't just use data literacy 101. Utilize that to catapult you forward, to be curious and ask more questions.
No, I appreciate that, Jordan. I appreciate your passion. Appreciate your passion for the Army.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, data literacy in general, right?
Absolutely.
It's for our Army, and you know, honestly, that's why we really care here.
Yeah.
Right? You know, it's about taking care of people and soldiers and making sure the Army's as strong as it can be. So, hey, thanks for being here
Absolutely.
In Kentucky with us in the, you know, slightly freezing weather. even my house has frozen pipes, so, you know, that does happen here in Kentucky. But we'll survive, right?
Absolutely.
For those that are listening, thanks for listening this first TAG Book Club and talking a little bit with Jordan Morrow about Be Data Literate and his book. He has several other books. You pretty much can find those anywhere. You know, just Google his name if you're interested. It's on our reading list here at the Adjutant General. And you can follow us on all the social sites at the Adjutant General. Thanks for being here, and thanks, folks, for listening.